What's up, people? Welcome to the Sharp Tongue Podcast. Today, we talk about a lot of shit. We talk about Last Comic Standing. We talk about getting older. We talk about being turned on by females' visible muscle tone. We talk a lot about what's going on in the world. We talk about cops being shot. What the fuck is happening in the world, man? You got to tune in. You got to listen. Tell your friends about the Sharp Tongue Podcast. On this episode, we got comedian Alonzo Bowden. Buckle in, y'all. Hootie hoo! Buffalo soldier. I'm so glad y'all are here. I'm really, really happy about it. Let me tell you guys where I'm gonna be. I'm gonna be places live. Please come see me. August is chock full. Tomorrow, the 21st, I will be in Bakersfield, California at the Tembler Brewing Company with my boy, Jimmy Wissman. Everybody show up. Show up with the love. If you want a chance to win free tickets, email me at sharptonguepodcast@gmail.com. I'm giving away a bunch of tickets, so check that out. That's at the Tembler Brewing Company in Bakersfield, California, tomorrow night. Showtime at 7 o'clock. And then, what else do I have going on here? I'll be at Just for Laughs Comedy Festival. Very excited about that. I got accepted in. That's going to be in Montreal. I will be up there the 27th through the 1st of August. And then, I will be in Grand Rapids, Michigan, August 18th, 19th, and 20th at Dr. Grin's Comedy Club in Grand Rapids, Michigan, 18th, 19th, and 20th of August. The 26th of August, I'll be at Iowa State University. The 27th of August, I will be in Annapolis, Maryland at Ram's Head on Stage. And September 1st through the 3rd, I'll be at Comics Mohegan Sun in Connecticut. So all those dates are available at jessiemay.com. I'm giving tickets away for all of them. Email me at sharptonguepodcast@gmail. I also have given away my Snash jewelry custom rings to the two girls who sent me embarrassing stories. So listen to last week's podcast and the podcast before that. I mentioned the winners on last week's podcast, which I believe was that the 4th of Jewel High? Was that last week already? No, last week was Steven Glickman. So I mentioned the winner on Steven Glickman's episode. And the weekend before that, the show before that, 4th of Jewel High, I mentioned the other winner. So you got to tune in to know if you won or not. Listen, you got to be responsible with your life. I can't hold your hand. But two girls sent in really embarrassing stories. One was a cheerleader. One was about butthole bleaching. And girl, I want you to hit me up. I want to call this place. I told you last week. I was like, let's call this place and see what their deal is. Because I'm going to take care of your butthole. So check out jessiemay.com. Come see me live. Lot of shit happening. Jesus. Melania Trump. Her speech. Everyone, if you don't know what that was all about, look, just go on YouTube and type in anything. Type in poop and I'm sure the video will come up. She so-called plagiarized Michelle Obama's speech from years ago. But, you know, it's all tactics, man. All this shit at this point is just tactics. It's all tactics to get eyes on Trump. It's all tactics to get voters to support him. You know, people support craziness. So, you know, they go out there and they're attracted to whatever's going on. I mean, people, I feel like this political race is a circus. And you motherfuckers, I'm a comedian, okay? I'm not a politician. I know a little bit about a lot. I posted a picture of Melania Trump. I posted it on my Facebook page and on Instagram. And the Trump supporters, you guys are violent. You guys are violent and angry people. And I'm saying just from my experience. I'm not trying to generalize. I'm just saying in my experience, you guys, you got a lot of hate. It seems like you have a lot of hate in you. The people who have contacted me who took offense to me posting something about Melania Trump. Motherfuckers, I'm a comedian. This is my motherfucking job. to make fun of things, to bring into light some of the absurdities that happen in our culture. And I'm sorry, but Melania Trump saying a speech that Michelle Obama said almost word for word, definitely wasn't 100% plagiarized, but it was almost verbatim, is ridiculous. We have to talk about it. Does it mean I support Trump? No. Does it mean I support Hillary? No. So you motherfuckers got to stop filling in the blanks and just look at it as entertainment. Stop persecuting comedians. You know? You got to stop treating us like, you know, you got to understand what our jobs are, first of all. You got to understand what we're here for. Okay? We are here to make you motherfuckers laugh about crazy shit that's going on in the world. All right? And I don't mean to equate it to suffering of Jewish people, but I'm just trying to tell you, just don't hang us out to dry, man. Let us be your release. So if I make a post about Melania Trump, fuck off with your political agenda. I don't have a political agenda. My only agenda is to make you laugh and to make myself laugh. Don't read into my shit too much. I'll let you know when I'm trying to make a point. My podcast, I try and make points. Sometimes on Twitter, once in a while, I'll get into what's going on, some social commentary, very infrequently because I like to keep it entertaining. I like to keep my social media entertaining. I use my podcast to get into some realer shit. I use my podcast to smoke my weed, to think about what's happening in the world, break it down a bit, laugh about it a bit, cry about it a bit, and hopefully come out on the other end with you motherfuckers having a good time. So if you're up on my Facebook fan page, if you're all up on my Facebook fan page, if you're all up on my Facebook fan page going crazy over a post I did making fun of Melania Trump, you are using your energy in the wrong places. Maybe you should focus your energy on doing something proactive. You need to be more efficacious with your, you know, with your free time. Did I use that word right? I've been trying to use bigger words. Efficacious. Let's see if I said it right. Efficient, right? Efficacious. Yeah. Fuck yeah. I used it right. Woo! I just did word check on myself. Because I don't want you guys to hear me saying persecution. You're like, well, that has to do with religion, and that's not really what happened to you. The Jews were persecuted. You're being rude, and we're gonna blog about it. No, okay, listen. So just calm down. But I want to read some of this shit you guys posted. So go to my Facebook fan page. Check out my Melania picture. Even on Instagram, someone is jealous. Jealous of Melania Trump? Are you crazy? I am a little bit. Her Botox looks real good. I'm real jealous of that. What else? Let's see what else. Stranger danger. She married him for love. I used to be like you, but people in your position of celebrity should keep your mouth shut on things like this. You hurt your brand. Okay, Brian Henry. Really? I used to be like you, but people in your position of celebrity should keep your mouth shut on things like this. Are you a dumb motherfucker? Celebrities need to open their mouths. Who do you think sort of carves trends in society, especially when it comes to pop culture? People like I do. People like other famous celebrities, A-listers, people talking about stuff of power and of notoriety. That's a good thing, Brian Henry. I used to be like you, but people in your... What did you used to do, Mr. Henry? You used to be like me? Really? You sound like a pussy. And I mean that in the nicest way. I will not keep my mouth shut. That is the opposite of what I should do. We live in America. We have freedoms. People have fought and lost their lives for those freedoms. So if you want me to shut my mouth, why don't you move to a country where you are supposed to keep your mouth shut? Maybe you don't belong in America, motherfucker. I don't hurt my brand. You're hurting yourself, sounding like such a dumb idiot. You people are crazy, man. I'm just having fun, but I gotta let you know, when you say some dumb shit, I'm gonna say it back. Someone else said I liked it better when I didn't know your opinion. Bitch, what do you think I get paid doing? Talking about my opinion, Olivia Nissan. Yeah, I see you in your cowboy hat. I'm talking to you. I liked it better when I didn't know your opinion. Really? You just liked it better when my opinion didn't match yours. And that's the problem with America. We should be able to have separate opinions and come together as people to make a good decision. But you sound like you have a little bit of a problem. You sound like you might have a pride issue. Yeah, I bet you do. I bet you have a bit of a pride issue. And me having a post about Melania Trump doesn't mean it's my opinion. Again, I am a motherfucking stand-up comedian. Whether you like it or not, all you haters and trolls, I get paid to tell jokes. Ha, ha. Whether you think it's funny or not, the great thing about that, somebody else will think it's funny. So, deal with it. If you're going to voice your opinion, at least stay out of politics. I'm unfollowing you because of your ignorance. Dale Stevens, bye! Bye, Dale! If you're going to voice your opinion, at least stay out of politics. What are you people talking about? Do you know what country you live in? Are you aware of your fucking rights? I have a right to my opinion. I get paid for my opinion. And sometimes, majority of the time, I'm not even trying to voice my opinion. I'm just trying to have fucking fun and try and make you people have fun. At least stay out of politics. Why, Dale? Why should I stay out of politics? Because I'm a woman? Because my viewpoint doesn't match yours? I'm unfollowing you because of your ignorance. What's ignorant about making a joke? I get paid to make jokes. I will say this over and over until you people get it. Dale, until you understand. What's more ignorant is you telling me to shut my mouth when I'm supposed to open my mouth. Hello? I think you need to look at your passport and see what country you are from, because you do not sound like a proud American. Let's see, what else? Someone said you should really use your stardom for Bernie all the way. Well, I'm sorry, Emily. Bernie didn't quite make it. He was close, and I liked his ideas, you know, but he just didn't do it. I'm sad about it, but what are you going to do? Okay, what's going to happen? Somebody else said Hillary is a blathering dipshit. Trump makes it happen. What does he make happen, Pete? I'm not saying Hillary isn't a blathering dipshit. I just want to know what Trump makes happen. You said he makes it happen. Just tell me what it is. Someone else said bye, Felicia. You guys are crazy. Crazy. I can't handle you guys. You're so live. You guys are so live. Well, I did ask some questions on my Facebook fan page. I do this once in a while. I used to do it a lot more in the beginning of the podcast, and I'm going to start bringing it back, where I answer your questions, because I like to talk to you. I like to talk shit to you, as you can tell. And so I'll post these Q&As once in a while for the podcast. I'm going to start doing it more. But I asked a couple days ago, 2 days ago, for this podcast, if you guys wanted to ask some questions, I'll answer them. So, Autumn and Marie Lusion, if you couldn't make it as a comedian, what was going to be your fallback plan? I didn't have a fallback plan. I never... It's not even like we had that much confidence in stand-up comedy. I just had that much laziness to not also create a backup plan. I was like, well, this will work, right? I mean, I just don't have the desire or the time or energy to create another plan. So I'm going to go with this one. But, you know, I think sometimes when you don't have backup plans, it makes you realize you don't need one, really. If you just really commit and approach something with an open mind and figure out a way to use all of your resources, you'll make it work. And you'll find other avenues through the path you're on. And you'll find what you're meant to do if you keep your mind open and your viewpoints open and try and be as resourceful as you can. You'll figure it the fuck out. Okay, Autumn and Marie? Mark Welsh asks, when I win tickets to your show, is it the first year there's no Pittsburgh show? Oh, why when I win tickets to your show, is it the first year there's no Pittsburgh show? Mark, I was just in Pittsburgh a little while ago. We'll figure out how to get you to a show, okay? We will figure it out. Email me. I'll figure it out how to get you to a close show. And I'll let you know when I'm close to Pittsburgh. Mark Welsh, okay? Joe Coplin says, how bad do you want to kick Jimmy Wisman in the junk? I kick him in the junk all the time, okay? Theoretically. Katie Pratt, what's your favorite joke of mine or of somebody else's? One of my favorite Carlin jokes is when he talks about this is, you know, older joke when he talks about people saying, we need to save the whales, we need to save Earth. And the whole joke is about how Earth is fine, how we're the ones who are fucked. It's a really, really good joke. I've always loved that one. Check that joke out. And just Carlin in general. So damn good. Robert Jackson asks, have you done any stripping? Really, Robert? Why are you asking? Do you own a club? Because I will come and try it out. No, I haven't done any stripping. Things never got that bad. I did work at a strip club for a day, and I talk about that on my Jamie Lee podcast that I did a few weeks ago. So listen to that. Blake Sherman, who is the most overrated stand-up comic ever? That's a tough question, Blake. I don't know how to answer that, because anybody who's getting their money is getting their money, and I'm not hating them for it. I don't like to talk crap about comedians or anybody really like that. I can't think of anybody overrated. Maybe me at points of my career. Maybe me next year. We don't know what's going to happen. I could become the most overrated stand-up comic ever. You don't know. So let's just wait on that one. Matthew Kupfer, you have a chance to time travel, but you can only pick one. Going to the past or going to the future? Which one do you pick and why? The future, motherfucker! Because they're going to replace my organs. I'll be able to live forever. I'll be able to get past all this dumb, crazy shit that's happening in society. Maybe it'll be better. Maybe it'll be worse. I don't know, but I want to go to the future. I want to do that Marty McFly shit. Maybe I'll finally get a real hoverboard. Well, thank you guys for your questions. I appreciate it. I appreciate you communicating with me. And I even appreciate the haters, because, you know, you guys have a place in this world. And it's near the bottom, but I'll be down there with you once in a while just to remind you how much further you have to climb to get to the top to see the light. But it's okay. I'm here. I'm here for everybody. I'm glad you guys are here. This episode is a fun one. I interviewed somebody who I really don't know personally, but I knew professionally. I've respected his career. I've followed his career for a while. He has run the gamut of the career as far as like the comedy spectrum. He's done it all, and he considers himself the quote-unquote old man of comedy, which I wouldn't say that, because he still is vivacious. He still has musculature. He has muscle definition. He's still doing his thing, and he's a beast on stage, just so damn funny. And he's the type of comic, when you watch him, you're just like, damn, I need to go back home and write some more. I hope you guys enjoy my interview with Alonzo Bowden. Hootie hoo!
Her using all the lingo. You just drop a marker.
Look at that
right
voice.
There.
We good? We're back here at the Sharp Tongue Podcast. We decided to add a little flavor in the house. We're just going to do three people.
I'm just going
to
hang for a few minutes.
Hang for a few minutes. It's a two way. I'm getting DP'd right now. Just verbally DP'd. Right. We got Mr. Alonzo Bowden up in here.
Good afternoon.
How you doing,
literally,
sir? Literally
5 minutes.
It's literally 12:07.
Yeah. So I made it. I'm good. How you doing?
I'm well. We were up here talking about this crazy man's career.
Steve, he's hilarious. And that was...
stop.
No, back when the last Comic Days, weren't you coming out of Dante? You were like Dante. You were in a workshop or something.
God.
I was taking stand-up classes.
Comic?
Oh, God. No, but it was right before. It was like kind of like coming out of that and into like the real world.
And had you known Alonzo prior to Last Comic? I mean, you knew who he was, of course.
We may have met, but he was funny and he was playful. I do remember that. I remember you were kind of, you were like some stand-ups like me are just like, we stand there and talk and we're like focused on it and this and that. But you always had, that playfulness about you that, he was great. He was great. He was new. He was a rookie, but he was still good.
Yeah.
You know, so.
What did you get like from being a judge on that show and being a stand-up comedian? Like, how did that influence you? It must have changed you a little bit.
I'll tell you, the first thing was I realized, like, having one Last Comic Standing, I never really realized how big it was.
Right.
Because when I did it, my whole thing was just survive to next week.
Right.
Literally,
like
that's the way I looked at it. I didn't think about how big it was. So when I became a judge and we traveled all around, I was like, wow, I beat a lot of people.
You know,
that was one feeling. But no, what you find out as a judge, I found out what it's like to be on the other side of a casting table. And I said, this is how I'd break it down out of 100%. We had 10% that were complete train wrecks, had no business being there. You know, ex-porn stars, people who just stood in line because they didn't have anything else to do.
Oh,
people who told three jokes at work or something.
My mom thinks I'm funny.
Yeah. Then we had 80% were okay. They were comics. They had been doing comedy 3, 4, 5 years. They might have been funny, maybe had some road gigs, you know, some road middles, hosts, blah, right. blah, blah. They were all right, but they weren't ready yet, you know? And then we had 10% that were ready. They were good. And, you know, they may or may not make it. I put Steve in that category. They did enough to be the tough thing was to be identifiable,
right? And we had different from
we had
else.
Certain things that we hated,
like what?
Okay, like Kathleen hated twofers, and what a twofer is when you come in. Oh, my mom's Iranian and my dad's Puerto Rican, so I bomb bodegas or something. You know what
right.
I mean? Like half and half.
Yeah,
she hated that. I didn't like people who didn't use their real name. If you came in with a nickname, you know, my name is Heartlove. No, it's not. No, I'm not going to put Heartlove on TV. Heartlove, fuck off. You know, I did not like
Heartlove
nickname. Yeah, you get all kind of crazy nickname type stuff. So that bothered me. But then the hardest ones. Okay, there were 5%. Continuing my 100%, 5% walked in and made it. Killer comics, been doing it a long time, pros, hit the audition and you knew, no question, they're good enough. Ralph Harris, for example, was one of those. Ralph was, you know, just a killer pro, ready to go. The toughest 5% were the 5% that were good enough, but why do we pick you over you? Those were the hardest ones where, you know, it's like, okay, so we got, you know, comic A and comic B. Why should one of them move on? Those were the hardest ones to make the decision. The funniest thing was judging people who I had opened for.
Oh, man.
You know, I had Bob Zaney. Early in my career, I worked for Zaney so much. Bob Zaney used to book a bunch of one-nighters up and down California, and I used to work his rooms all the time. Shoemaker, I had opened for Shoemaker in the past. Wally Collins, like I remembered Wally Collins. Wally hosted MTV, you know, back in the day before I was even, you know, when I was open miking, he was hosting a TV show. And what happened with Wally's a great comic. Wally and Shoemaker both made the same mistake. They picked the wrong material.
You think they picked material that is pleasing instead of material they wanted to do?
No, for whatever reason, I don't know why they picked it. It wasn't bad, but like when you did the daytime audition, right? That's when we pass Steve. When you come in, you do 2 minutes for us during
right.
the day.
Yeah.
Then if we pass you, you go on at night in front of the crowd, and then it's kind of how much does the crowd like you, right? So that when they went up at night, they picked the wrong material. So that, in other words, it's all about who's laughing that night in that crowd.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we couldn't pass them based on the fact, like, I know you're a brilliant comic, but we can't send you to the next round based on that. It has to be based on what happened that night.
Right.
And if you pick the wrong material and it doesn't go over for that crowd, you know, it doesn't, that's it, you know? And so that was tough. And then there were others we were dead wrong, you know?
That you thought would be good
passed,
and they didn't.
Okay, and I'll give you an example. And he has a nickname, Lil Rel.
Lil Rel. Shit.
We passed on Lil Rel, and now, you know, he's a star on the Carmichael show and doing all of his own thing. But part of the problem he had was that a lot of them had. We expected most comics, obviously, you expect to be in New York or L.A. So the show has like 40 spots for semifinalists.
Right.
And they budgeted, you know, 25 of them to be out of New York and L.A. Well, the Midwest, had the strongest lineup of comics. It was an unbelievable, because it was all the Midwestern. It was the Chicago comics and the Minnesota and
Minnesota
Nashville and all of that.
Punks,
you know,
comedians.
They were all auditioning in Minnesota. So we only had like 6 spots and we should have had, you know, a dozen. And that's one of the reasons Lil Rel didn't make it, because there was so few. They were telling comics in Minnesota, they were like, can you please make it to Phoenix? Can you get to Phoenix for that audition? Because then we have, you know, more openings or whatever. But it was what it was. So it was a great experience. It was fun. So I probably learned more about what comics were doing. And it was the longest period in my career that I ever went without performing.
How long? Oh, that gives me like anxiety.
I went 6-7 weeks without getting on stage.
And do you remember getting on stage the first time?
Oh, yeah.
Was it rusty?
Yeah, it was rusty, but it was fun. I went on, we did the audition in San Antonio, and they were having some kind of show. And I was like, look, I got to do a spot. I got to get up, you know. And fortunately, I did well enough that they didn't question me as a judge, right? Because they're all there. God. They're all there. And they're like, man, if you bomb, you know, we're going to talk shit. And it was like, no, there's a reason I'm here. Yeah. I got this.
Yeah.
So. Do you remember when Lunell was at the...
I don't remember Lunell's audition.
They did a thing when this was the best. So I'll just say this real quick. And mm-hmm. I'll get
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
no, I don't want to be...
Please.
You know, they did this thing where they lined all of us up on stage and stuff. And then they have... Lunell was one of the people that was on the stage standing there with us. And every time they'd go, and the next person moving on is, and she'd go, it's me. And she would just walk up and they'd be like, no, please go back. Lynell, please go back, please. And the audience would laugh and they'd put her back in. She'd be like, when are they going to call my name? This is some bullshit right now. And then they'd be like, the next person is, you know, John Reap or whatever. They'd name someone else.
Right.
And that person would get up and go, and then they'd go, and the next person is, and she'd go, it's me. And she just did it like, she did like four times. And they
Beyond
were like,
when she'd be funny.
I don't think she...
No, she did. I don't remember. The one I remember, and it was from the year I auditioned, Lavelle Crawford.
Oh my God.
Auditioned. And they passed on Lavelle because there were certain people that I was looking at that I was sweating, and he was one of them. I was like, man, I don't want to go up against Lavelle.
Right.
Lavelle, he's a powerhouse. You know what I mean? And yeah, they passed on him. So it was fun. I had a lot of fun with Last Comic Standing. Obviously, it got trashed quite a bit. And most of the people mad at it were people that didn't get picked.
Of course.
Right.
And most of them got over it in time. There were a few that carried it. Every now and then, I'll still get somebody, hey, you passed on me at Last Comic. Really? You remember that? Like, I'm sorry. It's 12 years ago now, whatever.
They're just in your closet watching you sleep every night.
Yeah. That's,
can I tell you? One thing, and then I'm gonna leave.
Yeah,
you're gonna be like Lynell right now.
No. One thing, and then I'm gonna take off. I'm waiting to go into audition for you. Okay, I'm standing there in line, and the guy in front of me turns to me and he goes, hey, you want to hear my joke I'm about to do inside? You want to hear what I'm doing? And I go, I mean, if you want to, and he goes, I'll tell you, but don't you fucking steal it.
Yes, yeah, that was,
all right, what's the joke? He goes, why should you never bring hot dogs to a gay barbecue? I go, why? And he goes, because everybody's going to stick them in their asses.
And that would be that first 10% I was telling you about.
Oh,
that, like,
shit.
No, they ain't going to. No.
He walks in into the improv right here. The door, those flap doors flap open. He busts through the door, right?
Like he's
doors
got it.
Start flapping. They're slowly flapping. They're almost set. And yeah, I just see him fucking poof right back out the door. I was like, oh shit. And you know what? There's nothing better than going up after that.
Yeah.
Like that is, I just went up at the club a couple nights ago after a dude that ate. He just ate shit so fucking hard.
It is nice going up after
it's either
that.
Yeah, I either want to go up after someone who just killed or someone who just ate it. Because anything in between.
It's a challenge that way.
Yeah. It's a challenge. Then it's fun. It's
either
a game.
Way, it's a challenge.
I love watching them.
Bye, Glickman. It's been a pleasure,
care,
Shrek.
Great scene.
Thanks, buddy.
It was so fun.
Thanks for having me.
You have a good time.
You
get
too.
The hell out of here.
Bye.
Look at them yelling like they're more than 3 feet from each other.
I know, we're screaming
to those
at
who
each
are
other.
Listening. To those who are listening, they were literally... 3 feet
three
from each
three
other.
Feet apart.
They were yelling as if Steve were down the stairs and in the parking lot. I don't know how you young people do it these days.
How old are you, Alonzo?
54.
Holy
turned 54
fuck.
Last week. Yes, everyone in comedy is younger than me except Dom Herrera.
But you're in fucking shape.
It's on the outside.
You're broken. On the inside, it's just cobwebs
on the inside,
and darkness.
Oh, it hurts. It hurts. It just don't move like it used to. No, I've always worked out. So it's always been, you know, just there. I had an experience recently. When I say recently, this was last year. It was really funny. So I was doing a podcast with Terrell Owens, with T.O.
Mm-hmm.
We were doing a football podcast. And Terry Crews is a friend of his. So Terry Crews came in as a guest. For those listening, Terry Crews is the really big, muscular black guy who's funny. He's on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He does the great Old Spice commercials. He's hilarious.
He does the chest.
He bounces his
chest,
pecs.
Yeah, the pec muscle thing.
So I don't know how long ago there was a Schwarzenegger movie. It was about cloning.
And oh, yeah.
The sixth something, whatever it was.
The sixth element?
Maybe. I don't know what it was. It was something. But Terry Crews and I were up for the same role. I didn't know at the time it was him. But we were up for the same role as a henchman, right? And my thing was, I made it funny because we would keep getting killed and coming back. That was the cloning thing. And I thought that was funny. So when I did it, the director, whoever he was, he said, wow, we never thought of this as funny. And I'm like, the hell is wrong with you? It's hilarious. So it came down to me and Terry. They loved how I made it funny. They loved that Terry's like a monster when it comes to muscle and being in shape. I think has like 3% body fat or something like that. So
he's
anyway,
like Mount Washington.
Right. So he got the job. So now it's umpteen years later, I meet him. I say, yo, man, you destroyed my movie career. I had a shot. So he said, man, whenever you get mad at me, take a look at this. And he showed me a YouTube clip of when he played pro football getting knocked the fuck out. Like he got hit. It was one of those hits where they hit him and then you thought he was dead. He was just laying there.
Fuck.
And he said, whenever you're mad at me, you can always just watch me get knocked the fuck out. And we've been cool. I bumped into him a few times since then. But
he's really sweet.
He's a nice guy.
The Funniest Fails. Did you do World's Funniest Fails?
No.
They give gifts like when you perform on it. And one of them was a hand towel and his face on it. And it was his face and underneath it said cloth. And I have that in my bathroom. And it's just like Terry Crews' face on my
Terry Crews is hanging
towel.
Out in your bathroom. That's funny.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
Yeah, he is. He is.
You've been at this for some time, huh?
I'm 23 years in, and you know, I still love stand up almost too much, you know.
You have to love it.
But I never pursued acting hard, you know what I mean? I would like go on auditions here and there, but I still love stand up. And the funny thing now is in the past 5 or 6 years, I've become the old guy. So,
like for auditioning?
No.
Or just in general?
No, young comics. Young comics come to me and ask me more questions about, you know, what to do, what do I think it is, what was it like back in the day, this or that. And it's funny because when I was a rookie, like George Wallace was one of my mentors.
Oh my
and
God.
Now these guys ask me word for word the same questions I used to ask him. That's when I knew I'd become the old guy. I was like, wait a minute. Not only are they asking me this shit, I know this shit. So I guess I have been in the game. But yeah, I've been in the game a long time, still grinding. And
how do you feel like on either end of social media? Because, you know, I
missed it. I missed it. Me and Heffron joke about this all the time. So we were a little too young, too new. Shouldn't say too young, too new. We missed the boom of the 80s.
Yeah.
We just missed it. We started in the early 90s. Ugh. And then when social media blew up, we were just a little too old. So we timed it perfectly to not make it on either end. We literally said, you know what would be good? The middle. We're going to go with the middle. I'm happy for people in social media. Dane's a friend of mine. And I was working with Dane all the time at Dublin's. And it was a great time for everybody. We had all of us who worked Dublin's had fun. I'm sure you've heard the story.
Yes.
But it was so weird because it seemed overnight and Dane became ridiculously famous. A little, but it was like, where are you working this week? Oh, I'm doing the Tampa Improv. Where are you going? Oh, I'm going to Hilarities in Cleveland. Oh, where are you going? I'm going to, you know, whatever in Detroit. Then it's a month later. Where are you going? Oh, I'm going to the Improv in San Jose. Oh, I'm going to Madison Square Garden. What?
You're like, what? And it's sold out. And it's sold the fuck
what?
Out.
You do where? You need an opener? You know. But that was the start. MySpace was the first big one, and he knew that, and nobody else did.
He got ahead of that.
He was on Facebook when it was only college students because he was a big-time college comic at the time. And my thing with social media, I like it. My fans are a little older than social media.
Right.
So I've never had the big hit. I have like 25,000 followers, and I was talking with Fitzsimmons about it once, and Fitz said, well, the thing about it is you have 25,000 real followers. Like they're actually
fans
of yours. as opposed to having, you know, 100,000 who've heard your name. I'm like, yeah, but they want you to have 100,000. So,
but it doesn't. It's so weird.
It is what it is. The only I'd say negative to comedy that has happened as a result of social media is the one bit wonder.
Yes. Which, and how that sort of sets the comedic standard.
Right. There was a time, you know, let me get old on you.
Go ahead.
You had to have an act.
Yep.
You had to have an act. And the one bit wonder, just like the one hit wonder in music, they only have that one clip and they do a live show and the audience is there to see them do that bit.
That's it.
Like the rest is just noise.
They don't even give a fuck.
Right.
They're like, what's all this other mishmash?
Right.
Give us what we want.
It's the same thing with music, right? If you have a one hit wonder, they play other songs and you're like, what is this shit? Nobody heard this shit. But then they play their hit and everybody loses their mind, yeah. Right? So it's the same thing. So I don't knock it. It is what it is. It has its good points, like anything else, good points and bad points. It's tougher for the new comics because, you did it. You've done incredibly well, but the new comic, you're totally expected to build your own name.
Yeah.
You know, like when I started on the road in the 90s, you had local radio stations still. So when you went to a town, you did 5 radio spots, yep, and that filled the club. That's all gone now.
It's all gone, especially because the way people digest radio now, they have Pandora, they've got Spotify, they have all these other things. They're not even engaged in the radio anymore.
Right, and there's no late night.
And there's late night. Nobody
watches anything in particular. I have to say, when I finally did The Tonight Show, and Leno was great to me with The Tonight Show, even though it wasn't the same as doing it with Johnny, it still felt good.
Oh, yeah, because it's legitimizing.
The Tonight Show. That's a show everyone's heard of. So that was really cool. But
was the prep hard? Everyone always talks about the prep. Like,
no,
for you.
No.
Because you're focused.
Well,
you seem overfocused.
There's two reasons. One, I was coming off Last Comic Standing, right? So I'm coming off of doing a ton of TV spots, a ton of 4-minute TV spots. The other is because I'm a setup punch guy, it's never hard for me to do a short set. When people say you got to do 3 minutes, I'm like, okay, because I know how to pull. Like, to me, it's always, I always look at it like Sports Center.
Yeah.
You're not watching the game. This is the highlights.
Right.
But my act is the type I can pull highlights out and just throw them together. And I think it was Rich Scheidner who gave me the best tip. He said, it doesn't have to make sense.
Like segueing and all.
He said, don't waste any time. It doesn't have to be segue. He said, listen, you could talk about your car, then talk about your mother, then talk about your dog. Nobody gives a shit.
That's
just tell the jokes.
Just tell the damn jokes. If they work, just fucking tell them.
If you're doing an hour special, you need segues. If you're doing a 4-minute TV spot,
just fucking
talk
get the jokes.
Fast.
Talk fast and don't mumble.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm always afraid that I'm going to mumble. I'm such a mumbler sometimes.
Really?
Yeah. Happens sometimes. It happened... I don't know. I was taping something last week just in New York and I had to get a joke out and I was like, it's like, what just, I just lost control of my tongue.
That doesn't happen. The worst one that happened to me was, I did the nightly show and their round table is a free for all, right? You just got to yell the loudest, which I didn't know. I had never done the show. So I had a joke and I only did the setup and I didn't get to do the punch. And then I got a bunch of hits. Damn, you're a horrible sexist person. Cause it was an IKEA joke and it was about women and men in IKEA. And I only got the woman part out.
What was the setup?
Know?
Do you remember what the setup was?
It was about how women like nesting and, you know, I don't remember exactly what the joke was. It had something to do with, something was going on with IKEA at the time. And I was talking about how women like nesting and building the home and stuff.
Love it.
And how men, I remember what it was. And then men, we act like, yeah, well, I'm here to build the furniture. And then you get to the house and she's building the furniture because men can't fucking follow instructions, right? So that was the joke. But all I got out was women like nesting. Oh, you horrible, sexist, no good bastard. You know?
But women do like nesting.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter, right? When you say, that's the thing. Another thing about social media, even if you say something that's true, it's hard. Like if you say black people like basketball, you racist son of a bitch.
Yeah.
You no good. Yep. It's like, well, actually, we
it's
do.
It's just a fact.
We do. And we're extremely good at it.
People, this platform people have. Social media gives like just everyday people the right that their opinion is highly coveted.
Yeah. I did a show for the ACLU yesterday. And I said, I appreciate what you guys do. You defend people's rights. You need you shouldn't have to defend the rights of stupid people. You know, I'm all for free speech,
man.
But if you're stupid, then like, and the poster is if you hold up the sign, keep government out of my Medicare. No, we don't defend you.
Yeah, that's just dumb. It's just so dumb.
No, if your sign is spelled wrong, no, we cannot defend your
when
rights.
It's spelled wrong, and when people make these trying to make these poignant facts and points on Facebook, and they spell shit wrong, the your and your, the there, theirs. Yeah. I'm like, I can't.
Oh no, I'm not talking
you
about
lost
that.
Me.
That no, I'm I love you know the Black Lives Matter haters that I hate Nigers.
You're like, N-I-G-E-R. Oh, what's that? Is that a new animal we haven't found?
Okay. Well,
what's
if you
niger?
Find one,
yeah.
You find one, you go ahead and hate it. Like that. And that's where you find it. You find the dumbest. It shouldn't be any surprise, but like the most hateful things is where you find the
dumbest
people. You know?
Because it's rooted in like this fear and this total ignorance.
Yeah.
And it definitely usually is synonymous with.
Yeah. There's only one
idiocracy.
E in fetus. For those who plan to head to the abortion clinic, just so you know, there's only one E.
Oh, my God.
I've seen those signs. I know you've seen those.
Yes.
Yeah. You're just like, yeah, okay.
It's to me, and as comedians, being on the road, and we go to, you know, we go from one coast to the other, and we see all types of people. And when you go to these towns, you realize that there's a usually kind of like a common heartbeat amongst these people and what they think and their ideology. And when you get to the middle of the country, you realize that there's a lot of the more in the middle you get, the more narrow-minded I feel a lot of people tend to be. Do you find that?
Yeah, but I don't blame the middle as much as the South, because in the middle they literally haven't seen, like, this is all new to them.
Yeah,
they've seen Black people, they have not seen Latinos. They didn't know gays existed.
Right.
You know what I mean? So but they're like, wow, like they have to adjust to this.
Right.
You know what I mean? But in the South, they, and this is not all, but that certain percentage is, they're intentionally ignorant. Like they refuse to, like the evidence is in front of them. And so they refuse to accept it. Those are the ones, that's why I'm all for allowing the South to secede. You know, it comes up every now and then, and
I'm
like, when you ask, we will let you go.
Yeah.
You tell yourself you won the war. Just leave, you know.
Just get the F out.
And yesterday, Jeff Garland was on the show I was doing, and he said something, and I wonder about this. Now, maybe he's more positive than me. He was talking about Hillary Clinton winning the election in November, and he said that there are a lot of dumb people in America, but there are more smart people. And it's just the smart people tend to be quieter. And maybe that's true.
There's something to that.
I mean, last election, that's what happened. You know, I call it the grown-ups. It was like, it looked close between Romney and Obama. And then on election day, the grown-ups showed up.
Yeah.
And Obama won. And it was like, people were like, what are you? Of course I'm voting for Barack Obama.
Been quiet the whole time.
The country's working.
Yeah.
You know, I give a shit if he's Black.
Yeah.
Look, I have a job. Gas costs $2 a gallon. You damn right.
Yeah.
I'll vote for him a third time. You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I hope that's what's going to happen. But our election cycle, it becomes a lower and lower common denominator. And for you guys, I joke all the time, and I'm going to put you in the class of millennial, not in any negative way,
okay,
other than based
right
on
there.
Your age.
I'll put you in the class
based
of
on
interracial
your assumed
category
age.
Yeah. Of porn.
No, yeah, I believe me, I'm right there. But
you and I should be the poster for that.
But I always say, like, well, listen, we had a good run. I wish you guys luck.
Fuck, we're fucked.
Because it's weird. In some ways, yes, and in other ways, no. It's the United States. It's the best and worst of everything.
Do you know there's a drop? My man sent me an article about entrepreneurs in this generation, and there's 65% less young kids within the age range of, like, you know, whatever, 29 to like 35, 36, that are actively trying to be, you know, create jobs or create a business. 65% less than it's been in the past.
I'd be curious as to the reason behind
Instagram.
That. Yeah.
Snapchat.
Yeah, a lot of laziness.
Facebook
a lot of laziness, a lot of entitlement. Like spoiled.
Yes.
You know, but I and that is part of it. I don't know. Like I say, that's why I say I don't know what's going to happen. Because, yeah, you talk about Snapchat, but the same generation invented Snapchat.
It's
so
true.
Some guy made $1 billion.
Someone made $1 billion.
Somebody had the idea.
But
so
it's a weird conundrum because we're in this generation where information is more accessible than it's ever been. We can literally go to college on our own dime, at home, on our phones.
Right.
If you're that motivated, you could get a whole college education on your cell phone. But on the other flip of that, this Instagram generation, you could just sit at home and also just do squats holding your child and sell products on your Instagram page and not do shit to
Amazingly.
Forward society.
Amazingly.
Doing fucking fine.
Amazingly.
Like, chilling.
That kind of shit, it fascinates me because it's like, why do I have an act? Couldn't I have up with something and done
I just
that
borrow a
repeatedly?
Kid and do kitchen squats and sell, you know, Shred X or whatever fucking.
And you know it's funny? Every mother is like,
what the fuck?
I did kitchen squats if a woman
I
has three kids.
Kitchen
if
squats.
A woman has three kids, it's like, you know how many kitchen squats I did? I didn't know what could charge people. What?
You could charge people to do kitchen squats with you. It's like this weird middle ground of we have all the tools we need to be the most amazing generation, but do we have the motivation and ambition? And I don't know if we do. I don't know if we do because...
I don't know. I'm not, you know, I don't knock millennials. I do knock hipsters.
Yeah. Yeah, knock them over.
Straight
like,
over.
Literally into
just,
the street.
Oh, I just... You know, here's the thing. When they grabbed the Amish and shaved them, it was a terrible thing. If you grab a hipster and shave him, we're okay with that. We're not going to get
don't
mad.
Don't shave the pays off the Amish. that's
you
orthodox.
You can't. That the Amish, that was a hate crime.
Yeah, that's a hate crime. You can't shave them. That's biblical hair.
But a hipster, nah.
Get rid of that beard. Nah. Get rid of that whole...
Yeah, go ahead. Shave it. Might be a job under that.
Who wears linen and suspenders in the summer,
oh
you
God.
Hipster asshole?
And Portland, that's my favorite place, the lumber sexuals.
The lumber, yeah.
They
just found out about that.
They literally look like lumberjacks.
They do, and they call
never
them lumber
worked,
sexuals.
Yeah, and they've never worked a day. You drop them in the woods with a tree,
they're dead.
The trees are safe.
The mosquito stings them, and they die. They die from a mosquito bite. But they can tell you about craft beers.
And you're a young woman, so fortunately you said you have a man, and I'm assuming he's a guy, and you're okay. Cause
he's a manly man.
You know, I have a niece. My the one I was worried about, she's 24. I was worried about it. I was like, there might be a hipster involved. But
no,
and
hipsters.
I talked to her and she said, I hate beards. I was like, good.
Yeah.
Good. So, yeah.
Because they're like, I feel like hipsters are just like lazy dudes that just want to look. You know, they also just want to have like their Instagram page pay for their life.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, and they were, because I was making fun of them and they were like, my beard is manly. And I'm like, no, you know what's manly? Like, be able to change a tire.
Oh,
like,
if you,
like
fix
you know
my,
what I mean?
Pipes?
Do something. Do like get a job.
Yeah.
Like that's manly
that
shit.
Is manly.
Go to work.
Yeah.
You know, what'd you do today? I'm tired. Why?
Yeah.
I went to work. That's some manly shit.
My man laid a floor down and I was like, I'm you just got 3 years of blowjobs. You just laid a floor? I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, I can do mechanical stuff, but I can't do house stuff, but I have a friend who does all that. I'm like, man. That shit, good for you.
Just
like,
a tool belt?
Yeah.
If you
I do know
in
how
a tool
to,
belt?
I do know how to use tools. But even changing a tire, or like when this guy told me he didn't know how to jump start a battery, I was like, what do you mean? Like, when did they stop teaching that?
When they started teaching how to pomade your beard.
He said, you just call AAA or whatever. You just call service.
What, if a man
and
can
if,
change
if
a tire?
I pulled up, if I was a AAA guy and I pulled up and you needed the battery jump started and you didn't know how to do it.
As a man?
I'd get back in my truck. I'd be like, you know something? Good fucking luck. Like, no, I'm not jump. You figure this out. I'm here. I got jumper cables. If you don't know how to hook these up, I'm leaving.
Have you been married? Or
No, what? I never. I'm married to this shit. Another story from one of my hero, mentor, friend, whatever, Lewis Black. When I heard Lou say that, Lou's, you know, I don't know, 10 years older than me or something like that. But they asked Lou one time, you never got married? Married to this shit. And I was like, that's exactly it. Yeah. And she is a jealous bitch. She
yeah,
does
she
not
is.
Like competition.
Vindictive.
She wants all my time.
Yep.
She at times pays well. I give her that.
Sometimes she puts out.
She does well. But
she makes you work for it.
Yeah. No, there were two women I look back in my life and say, should have married. And then there's
really?
One that I'm like, thank God I didn't.
There's two you think about that?
Two I think about that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And do you talk to them still?
One of them I still talk to now and then. She's married.
Oh.
And we, Yeah, we don't talk like that. Although one time she said, oh yeah, if this ever doesn't work, you're my first call. You know, and I was like, don't tell me that.
You're like, listen, I'm gonna set your house on fire. Don't tell me that shit.
But yeah, and the other one, and you talk about what's sexy. She was the smartest woman I've ever dated, and that was sexy as hell.
Do you hear that, ladies? All you women out there. He said she was the smartest woman and it was sexy as hell. Stop worrying about your motherfucking eyebrows, your goddamn waistlines, all this shit. Just get some damn education.
Yeah, I mean, all that's great. Listen,
stuff is good too.
I love beautiful women. I love women who are comfortable being sexy. Yeah. I've always loved women more than girls for that reason.
Right.
Girls try too hard. Women are like, yeah, I wear heels because I look good in heels. Right. It's not a statement.
I don't need it.
Right. It's not a statement.
Right.
But, you know, and I love all of that. But no, she was smarter than me. And really, she was. She was actually a genius. This was the funny thing to me. She was like, yeah, I went to Harvard. I'm thinking, when I was 16. I was, wow.
What?
I was like, so you're really a fucking genius. Like, that's, you know, you seldom meet someone who's really a genius. Like, you're like, oh, you're a genius. Like, no, you really, like, you have papers and shit. You can certify you were
What did
a
she go
genius.
For?
She was a, it was so funny. She was a corporate lawyer and she left that and she started teaching. As far as I know now, she works as a teacher and she's a mom and all that. But she was, and I was just too dumb. I was afraid to move her to LA and commit to all that.
Right.
You know, it was a dumb move. But anyway, smart women are phenomenal. I love fit women. I love a woman. If a woman has visible muscle, I fucking lose it. Like,
can you
I
call
love
your next title
shit.
Visible Muscle?
I love that shit. I always said that if I had made it like huge and I had to hire security, I would have had two women bodybuilders to protect me at all times. That's sexy as hell. Like, yeah.
Visible Muscle.
Visible muscle.
Did you cry when China died?
No, but I you know, she was on my list.
She was?
Oh, fuck.
Shut
yeah.
up.
Yeah. The only thing when China went too far with the roids and the jaw went to a man jaw, that ruined China for me.
China's on your list?
She,
who
the
else?
Man,
Serena?
The man jaw ruined
man jaw
it
ruined
for
it.
Me.
Who else
but
do you
other
like?
Than that,
Serena's
sexy. So I was saying they just had doubles at Wimbledon.
Yeah.
Can you imagine looking across the court at the Williams sisters?
Terrified.
You're like, you know something? We don't even have to play.
I would shart in my tennis skirt.
Like, look, we don't even have to
no,
play.
We've done.
How about we just, you know, we're going to go ahead and concede.
Let's just say we're going to jump ahead to what's going to happen.
Because you're literally like, there's two, like, think of the 4 years that Serena, that Venus was playing. And then Serena
Jesus.
Came out, and they were all like, wait, there's another one?
And then when they play each other?
That one's better? What?
You're like, what is going
you know,
on?
Like, Tiger Woods didn't have a little brother.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you're like, all right, Tiger's done. We can play golf now.
Yeah.
You know, with Venus, it was like, yeah, I'm tired. But my sister's pretty good.
You're like, and the pretty good is better than anybody's best.
No, Serena is, Serena Williams is definitely sexy.
She's a babe.
Eva Mendez is on my list. Eva Mendez has that Latin dangerous
she does.
Hot psycho, like she might kill you and you're like, that's good.
And you're like, it's fine because that
I'll
face
go.
Is angelic.
I'll go. Yeah. And,
she's got a great mouth.
And Vanessa Williams, because Vanessa Williams, I don't even know how old she is and she's still amazing.
Oh no, she still looks great. I think she's in her 60s.
Yeah, and it's
Let's
still
it
still crazy hot.
What's
it's
a like, guess? How old do you think Vanessa Williams is?
I'm going to go 61.
I'm going to go.
Because it was in the 80s when she was Miss America or Miss
You're
World
right.
or whatever it was.
I'm going to say 63. Let's see how old she is. Vanessa Williams, actress. They don't want to say how fucking old she is. Wikipedia, here we go. Damn, she still looks good. And she's touring. She's 53.
No, she's older than that.
Well, she's got some Google stuff happening for her. It says 53.
53? Maybe she... No, I thought she was older than that.
She was Miss Syracuse. I'm from Miss Syracuse. She was Miss Syracuse.
What year?
1983, she was Miss New York, 1983, then Miss America, 1984.
Okay, then she is. So, all right, I'm in the age range. Now I just need an NBA career. Can I possibly get an NBA? Which I actually used to have. I used to tell people I played for the 89 Clippers because no one knows.
No one knows.
No one knows who played for the Clippers.
You're a tall dude, too.
I'm 6'3". So to ordinary people, I look like a pro athlete. to people who've never actually met a pro athlete. You know, once you meet a pro athlete, like, oh yeah, no, you're not.
Like, no, his face is too symmetrical. He's not a pro athlete.
I've been around those guys. That's one of those things that I've loved. Like, back when I played ball a lot, I got to play with some NBA players. And I don't know what the female equivalent is for this, and maybe it's a sports thing or whatever, but every man, if you play sports, you wonder, could I have made it?
Yeah.
Could I have blah, blah, blah. I got to play with NBA players. You learn in 2 minutes. Nope, not a chance.
Yeah,
completely
they're so quick.
Different game. They're quick. They're strong. Like, everything they do that much better.
Their pivots are like,
yeah, yeah. But it was fun being on the court and getting to play ball with those guys. I love that.
I think the equivalent for women is being a stripper.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's always like, I wish I could be that flexible and that comfortable just flipping around a pole.
Yeah.
And just collecting that cash.
Yeah. They are athletic.
They're very athletic.
They're very athletic.
Very athletic. And they have that visible muscle that you're talking about.
Some do.
Visible
some do,
daddy
but you
got to
be careful. You got to be careful of drugs and daddy issues.
Yeah, like, those are more visible.
Thin, and she's a little more thin next week, you know. So,
visible mess sores.
Yeah, yeah, you got to be, you know. That whole world, that stripper porn world, it's because comics, we're in it all the time,
yeah.
Right? Because we're two sides of the same coin.
Yep.
And the women who do it but aren't fucked up are fascinating.
They are fascinating because they figured out how to do it without getting too deep.
Right, right. But the ones who are fucked up, it's like tragic.
It is tragic. But I feel the same way about like when I go into these small towns and I go to like a Waffle House or a diner.
Yeah.
And a waitress comes up and you're like, what the fuck happened to you?
Yeah.
I had this one
chick.
What's your story? I was in Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania. She came up and I was like, I want to know what her story is because she talked slow. You could see her self-loathing a little bit.
Yeah.
She had makeup on, so she cared, but there was sadness behind her eyes.
Well, you know, sometimes it's you never got out of that town. The other side of that coin is when you're in a town, and it was some little town in southern Illinois, like right across from St. Louis, you know, like across the river. I don't know the exact. The woman, we checked in the hotel. This woman was one of the most beautiful, like she was stunning.
Yep.
You know, and you're like, what the hell
are you
doing here? Like, leave.
They don't
just
know.
Just leave. You'll be okay.
They don't know.
You know? And yeah, and they don't. And sometimes those women, and you know, the other funny thing when you start doing the Midwest, because I'm a city guy. I grew up in New York. I moved here. You're like 23. Yeah, I've been married 4 years, got 3 kids, and it's like normal.
Chill.
Like it's not a mistake. It's like
they
that's
it.
What they do.
Yeah.
You know, you get out of high school, you get married, and that America is gone, right? That America
that
is
America
the one
is...
that Walmart destroyed.
Yeah.
Because there's no local hardware store to work at, and there's no you know, whatever they used to work at the plant.
Yeah.
There was always a job.
Manufacturing
at the plant,
jobs.
And the plant isn't there. That when you go through that Midwest Rust Belt, you know, for Ohio and Indiana and Michigan and all that, those people, it's like you want to tell them, listen, these jobs ain't coming back. Like, it's over.
It is over.
You know, and Donald Trump ain't going to help you.
Fuck, we're fucked.
Yeah.
Syracuse is kind of like that because we had
Syracuse
it was a manufacturing
like
town.
Syracuse is a very blue collar.
Very blue collar.
Rust belt town. Yeah.
We had, you know, New Process Gear, Carrier. We had a bunch of car manufacturers.
And
those
they almost caught
down.
Jim Boeheim.
Yeah.
Which, you know, they sort of caught Jim Boeheim. They're like, Jim, he was like, all right, I'll stop.
Yeah. All right. He's like, all right, I'll chill. I mean, if Jim Boeheim goes, that whole town just will
Jim
sink
Boeheim
into
goes,
the ground.
They were like, we can't. Somebody called. And said, listen, you can't take Boeheim. That's all they got.
We got the New York State Fair. We've got Coney hot dogs, and we got Jim Boeheim.
That's right. You can't take Boeheim from Syracuse.
Don't take Boeheim from us.
What happened to Syracuse? Oh, Boeheim left.
Oh, they got
and
Boeheim.
We closed it. We closed it. We tried to sell it to Canada, but they weren't interested. So we just shut it down.
Canada was like, did you guys get rid of Boeheim? Fuck you. What do you, I want to ask you this because I haven't talked to anybody about this yet. What do you think about what happened in Dallas?
Horrible. And you know, and I posted a few times about it. Horrible for a lot of reasons. First of all, the worst thing about it, and this is the two black men who got shot and the 5 cops who got shot. The real of their they left home that day and they're never coming back. Like, that's the part I can't imagine. You know, somebody your father, your son, your husband, your whatever it is, they're never coming back. That is a, I can't even imagine the pain, because you didn't see it coming. It's not like losing someone to a sickness. It's not like an old person. This is someone who goes out every day, does yeah. their life, and comes back. That woman in Minnesota, to watch the police kill her boyfriend, how does she, you know, I don't know how you handle that kind of trauma. You know, Dallas was, I don't want to use the word inevitable, but you saw it coming. You can't dismiss black lives. You can't continue to anger people on black people or any people on that level and not expect somebody to snap.
There's a retaliation.
This guy snapped. I'm not saying what he did was right. I'm saying that this is what would happen. And the worst thing about it in the black community is it became more dangerous the day after. You know, the day after was when my friend, I have two friends in particular, two close friends that have black sons in their late teens and 20s. And I was like, grab your son, tell him don't do anything.
Nothing.
Keep his head down. Don't, you know, because, and they were scared to death. One particularly, she has two sons in Texas in their 20s. She was like, I don't know what to do. And it's because you're worried about the police retaliation. You know, I've dealt with it in my life. I think every black person has, but I'm a large black man, right? So I've dealt with cops. The scariest thing is to be in a situation when a cop is scared of you. And I've
That's
been in
how
that
I felt
situation.
About that video with that woman. Do you hear when he spoke? He sounded terrified after he had shot that kid.
There's nothing worse, because when a cop is scared of you, he might do anything, you know. And L.A. had the same problems in the 80s and 90s under Daryl Gates. Daryl Gates was a police chief during Rodney King and O.J. and all that, and he was worse. He was horrible, and he ran a racist police force. And I had to deal with getting pulled over for driving while black. And, you know, there used to be places you didn't go. Like, you just didn't go to Beverly Hills because you knew Beverly Hills cops were going to hassle you. Burbank cops were going to hassle you. So you had that. I don't know what the solution is. But the other thing I posted, and this is absolutely true, and I posted it as a joke, like the racists always, you know, some of my best friends are black. Well, some of my best friends are cops. I've known a lot of cops over the years. I've done shows for different police departments and stuff. Cops are people. There's a lot of them that they're very funny. There is a gallows humor to it. I've dated a couple of cops here and there. They, you know, it's a tough job.
It's a very tough job. And not all of them are racist, and not all of them are profiling.
Not even close. But the worst of them, the worst thing in the police department is the blue code or whatever it is, where the good cops won't rat out the bad cops. And it's like, you have to change. You have to clean up your own house. You know who the cops are who are doing this, and you have to get rid of them.
Yeah, like, why are they covered? You know, it's such.
Well, they say because when you're on the street, you don't know who's there, and he's got to have your back. That's what it is. It's, you know, I talked to a guy in, he was an Army Ranger in Special Forces, right? And he said, look, what we do has nothing to do with the politics of war. I have to do my job because the guy next to me, his life depends on me doing my job. And police, I think they look at it the same way. And for most of them, like they say, most of them never draw their gun, and it's never that dramatic. But there are times when that's what they're thinking. Now, I have a friend who's with the Long Beach police, and she told me, she said, the problem is so many police are not educated. She said, these aren't police, these are security guards.
Yeah, they're security guards with guns. And even the cop training isn't good.
She said that, you know, if they had a higher standard of education where, you know, some college was necessary. Yeah. And then she said, and you have to learn to deal with other races. She said, because people live in their own tribe, right? So if you live around all of the same people, and now you're thrust in, and usually that situation is somebody who's around white people all the time, is now thrust into a black or a Latino neighborhood as the law, you know, it's easy to snap because you don't understand the culture.
And your fear sort of drives you
right,
in that sense.
Right, right. I mean, when Alton Sinclair in Louisiana, you know, he was hustling CDs in front of a store. Like, that's in the hood. People do that. You know what I mean? And you
Why
had,
did they take him down you, and fucking shoot
but
him?
But you
man.
Had him down. See, that's the thing. You already had
him
down.
You had him down. Why? To me, it's ill-educated cops who aren't properly trained, in fear, like you say, from not being exposed to a certain type of person.
And the other thing is there's no penalty for it.
There's no penalty. And the irony is, and the hypocrisy that exists, is that cops, like you said, they're not talking about the bad cops and what they're doing. They're totally under a blanket where they're all supporting each other.
Right.
But yet they go into the hood and they pull kids out of the hood and they want them to rat out all these other people so that they can catch them.
Right.
Well, if these guys are ratting them out so you can find some sort of justice in the streets, why doesn't that bleed over into the police force?
It's the double standard. And this is where the anger comes from. This is where the anger comes from. These kind of things. And you know, I don't know in the long term. Like, I don't know what America is going to be in 50 years.
Fuck.
I don't know.
We're
going to
be Wally.
We may be. Yeah, it could be the worst. We could figure it out, you know. On the hope side, I have a friend. He has three kids. They're 7, I think 3 and a newborn.
Wow.
And he said,
they fucking.
He said, yeah, yeah. He
good busy. For them.
Well, he's a musician. That's what they do. But he said, you know something? My kids have only known a black president. Think about that. To his kids, it is not. So when his kids grow up, it's not going to be unusual for there to be a black president. There are a million kids, you know, in America to whom the black president, like, yeah, it's normal.
It's normal. That's an interesting thing to think about.
You know, and the other thing is that white male, and I do a whole bit about it, but that Trump supporter white male, the angry, racist, sexist, you know what?
Ill-educated.
He's dying.
He's dying.
This is his last gasp.
And he's climbing up a muddy wall.
Yeah, he's trying to train a few youngsters, but they're not really going to buy into it.
Yeah.
They're sort of, you know. And the other ones that bother me, I think this guy named Wallace, I think he is one of these white supremacists, whatever, the one who came out and said, all right, Obama and Black Lives Matter, it's on. This is war. Drop him in a black neighborhood.
See if he still has all that vigor.
Those are the guys I want to see. We're going to drop you off at 164th and Central.
At 4 a.m.
No, we get in the middle of the afternoon.
Okay, we'll get middle of the afternoon.
But we want you to let them know it's on. Because as you know, or you may not know, black people have superhuman strength. It's the one excuse that annoys me more, because I'm one of them, right? You hear it over. All these people get killed by cops, and first the cops say, he had superhuman strength. When he grabbed me, you know, Trayvon Martin had superhuman strength. Trayvon Martin weighed 120.
He was 17.
Trayvon Martin was a skinny kid. Trayvon did not have super. Michael Brown grabbed me, and he yanked the door off the car with one hand and pulled me out. It was somewhere between the Hulk and Thor that I was up against, with some Iron Man throwing. It's like, would you at least come up with a more creative excuse? Does everyone have to have superhuman strength? I read it. Go back and read the articles and the defense. There were 5 of us on top of him, but we had to kill him. You know, Eric Garner, there were 5 of us, but he had superhuman strength.
My God.
And you're just like, you know something? Maybe you should work out.
Yeah,
you're a cop.
Half these cops, they've got guts,
right?
And they're sweating, and they're unhealthy.
And again, it's you know, it's a black mark on police departments, you know. And not to dismiss the Dallas shooter, but if you continue to push people,
they're gonna
then
push back.
There's going to be somebody who's extremely mad who's going to snap. You know, the white kid who shot the people in church in South Carolina, he was an example the other way.
Yep.
You kept telling him that black people are taking over and he, you know, you can't get a job because of black people, and black people listen, and he listened to you.
Yep.
And he snapped. And again, this is the other double standard. See, he was just a one time. He was just one case. But the shooter in Dallas, all black people are now killers who are out to kill cops. You know,
that's where the double standard happens.
Yeah, that's the narrative, and it's terrible. But you know, what are you going to do? I mean, you have Fox News, and you have that whole machine feeding this narrative, and you have what you were talking about, these people in the Midwest and the South who don't encounter and don't interact with anyone who's different, and they believe this shit.
And they believe it because it's just easier to believe than to educate and expose yourself.
Right. So I'm going to convert them one daughter at a time. That was my mission. I did my part. One daughter at a time. Damn it.
Yes, we can.
That's right.
Alonzo Bowden, one daughter at a time.
And that's the other thing. We comics do find the humor. It's some of it's horrible, but it's our job. We have to talk about it.
We have to talk about it, man.
We don't want to talk about it the day it happens, but within a couple of days, we're here to help people breathe.
We have to, because the pain of it is too visceral. I remember I was in a diner in Pennsylvania a few days, Thursday, and just watching the video from Sinclair. Was that his last name, right? And just baffled by what was going on. And I felt this overwhelming sadness. I felt like, I felt so sad. And I also felt that, I was like, something's going to happen tomorrow. Something, somewhere.
Yeah, there's a helplessness, you know, you're sad. And the thing was, I think what really triggered it was we hadn't even heard the Sinclair story when it happened again. Like, you literally thought, wait, this is the same. No, there's two. Like, you thought it was the same news story. And it's like, wait a minute, again?
Yep.
And you know, and it's not just that. It's the same thing with mass shootings. You know what this did? It made everyone forget Orlando. Orlando's done. Orlando's gone out of the news cycle. Nobody
cared.
They were still killed. There were 50 gay people killed in a hate crime.
Right.
And gone means not, like, that's how our news cycle works. It's a shame, but it's true. No, if you mention Orlando now, people are like, what?
They're like, I love
Disney.
You
going to Disney World?
You're talking about the Gator Baby? They remember the Gator Baby, but not the shootings.
And let me tell you something. The Gorillas family in Cincinnati wants that Gator dead because they're like, this is bullshit, you know? I mean, they want that Gator dead. There's a family of gorillas that is like, what the fuck?
Because they took his limelight?
Yeah. They killed the gorilla.
They killed the gorilla.
They killed the gorilla.
Know, I said that. I was like, you know, gorillas are highly intelligent creatures. You know they had a meeting of the minds. Like, yo, they got Harambe. What the fuck are we going to do?
I got to tell you, and this may just be, it may be a generational thing. I don't even think it's a black-white thing as much as a generational thing. But my mother, if you got in the gorilla cage, you going to get out of the gorilla cage.
You figured it out
how to get in. No, don't shoot the gorilla.
No,
he got in there. He wanted to get, I got two other kids. I ain't too worried about this one. He wanted to get in there. He going to figure out how to get out of there. That's right. Video that. Some bitch like to play with gorillas. Let him figure this shit out. You know, that's old school parenting. That's not in a book.
That's gone out of America.
That's not in a book. That's parenting when you were like, yeah, you want to get in a gorilla cage?
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, you'll be all right.
Do you do that on stage?
That's funny. At least leave you in there for a little while. She might have let you get rescued, but at least there's going to be a period of time
where
she's going to be like, no, you want to get in a gorilla cage. Look
she's
at
gonna
her.
She's going to let it percolate.
My mom's hilarious. My mom she says shit like that leaves me falling down laughing. And she does it. And I got it from her at the most inappropriate moments, you know.
Oh, man.
She's from South Carolina. She's from Deep South. And I thank her all the time for having moved to New York. But we used to go down there all the time when my grandmother was alive. And this is, so whenever they have a funeral, if you've ever been to a Southern Baptist funeral.
I haven't, but I've
it's
heard.
It's a production.
Yeah.
They
feel the feels.
She's like, look at them. She said, yeah, they all yelling, take me, Lord, take me. She said, but ain't none of them jumping in that hole. And I'm like, Mom, don't make me laugh right now. Don't stand next to the grave cracking jokes. She said, ain't none of them jumping in that hole. I lost it. Yeah, she's my favorite. She cracks me up with little
shit nuances.
Like that. Yeah.
The subtleties.
And you know, at the funeral, she's like, they all yelling, take me. Ain't none of them jumping in that hole. That stayed with me forever. That was so funny.
That's fucking hilarious. Oh, man. Where can people stalk you online?
At Alonzo Bowden. I use my name for Twitter and Facebook. On Instagram, I'm Zofunny. Z-O-F-U-N-N-Y. Somebody took my name on Instagram. I don't know if you've ever tried to get your name or something back. Like, you send your ID. It goes into a black hole. I had to email back and forth. There's no phone. You can't talk to anyone at Instagram. And I don't know where all my stuff went, but someone has my name. But I don't care. I just use Zofunny.
They took your name.
Yeah, they took my. I guess they thought, oh, we're going to charge him $1 million to buy his name back. Yeah, good luck with that.
I'm gonna call Instagram for you. I'm gonna raise hell.
If you got a friend,
I got a friend.
Honestly, I have tried to get it back, but you know, because I have like 2,500 people on Instagram, something like that. But I post. And so it's Zofunny. But yeah, if you go to @AlonzoBowden, alonzobowden.com, Christella and I are each other's favorite Alonzo. Yeah. So
that's she's really cute.
We've worked together. I love Cristela.
She's here. She's at the improv.
Yeah,
soon.
I know.
Yeah.
I love Cristela, but yeah, we joke about it. And then we did a show once. We did a show at Comedy Magic Club. It was called The Alonzos. It was Cristela Alonzo. It was Ed Alonzo, the magician,
yeah,
and me.
That's fun.
The three of us. Yeah, we had a blast. So yeah, that's me, Alonzo Bowden. I'm not hard to find. I've yet to be proven guilty of anything, so I don't have to hide, right?
Hands up.
Have to be like, oh man, if they find out. Isn't that great about being a comic? Like, unless you go to the Cosby extreme, you're pretty much scandal proof.
You are. It feels like a cheat in a way, but it is an amazing cheat.
You can never put a comic in a tabloid and have them say, no, I didn't do that. Like,
right.
Yeah, I did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, the goat didn't mind, and we're okay now. The goat's living in my backyard.
It got a little therapy. We realized our differences,
right,
and we're fine.
And then they're like, damn, couldn't make that. You know, they try, but they couldn't make that work. You know, they tried with Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy's been
so hard.
Gay, and he's been trans. Eddie's been through all kind of shit. And
yeah.
I think when Chris Rock and his wife were having problems, they tried. And Chris goes on stage and jokes about his wife. And you're like, damn, can't do it.
You can't.
You know? Can't. So
it's true though, as a comedian you don't really worry about much. I remember a couple years ago one of my exes was like, I'm gonna put pictures of you online, and I bugged out, and then I thought about it. I was like, all right, what the fuck.
Yeah,
great. I hope you do,
right? And unless you're married or have kids and you do something like that, like, you know, people, like, if you pictures in your life, they'd be like, well, damn, she's hot.
Right.
I thought she was hot. Yeah, she's fucking hot.
She got titties? Jessie Mae got titties?
Jessie Mae funny and got titties.
She always hides behind baseball shirts. Well, it's been such a delight talking to you, man.
Thank you.
We joke about what?
We joked with Tammy Pascatelli about that.
She's
when we were doing
funny,
last
man.
Comic. I love Tammy, but we were always like, you know, Tammy, you won Low Cut Top away from winning this show. Like, you let the guns out. We don't have no defense.
None.
But she didn't. She covered them up. Thank you, Tammy.
Some girls don't want to let the girls out. Thank you, Tammy Pascatitty, for not letting the titties out.
She's Tam's beautiful and funny. We had a good, like I said, we had a great time on the show.
You lifelong friends?
Yes, absolutely.
She seems so funny.
Tam, Kathleen Madigan, I loved before, loved even more after.
She's such a good comedian,
You talk about a master of the art. Like, literally one of the masters of the art, Kathleen. And me and Heffron, we still laugh all the time. Heff and I have had a weird parallel to our careers, and we laugh about shit. We, like, when we won Last Comic, we both did the same thing. We both bought houses, and then we were calling each other with house shit. We were like, hey, man, you know you got to buy a ladder? Like, you used to just
Your
ask the landlord,
like,
you have to go, you know how much fucking ladders cost? We'd be on the phone saying, you know how much ladders cost? I had to buy a fucking ladder. Doesn't the house come with one? You know, we were doing all that. So, and Goldman is a friend of mine, Gary Goldman, one of the smartest guys I know. And Corey Holcomb, just hilarious.
Yeah, he's a joke machine, man.
I love Corey.
I auditioned for Last Comic Standing very early in my stand-up.
Yeah.
It was in front of Natasha.
Oh, yeah.
Goldman and Andy.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I could dig up whatever. The jokes were just terrible.
Yeah. Well, you know, at that, like, you had to have some time behind you to do that show. They like to make you think it was some new people walking in. Australia. No,
right.
You had to work.
Yeah.
You had to be ready. You know?
It was something. I was like, okay, I need to really put some work in now because I just got torn apart by these people. You just walk out so humbled.
Yeah. I wonder how it would have been auditioning for Andy Kindler. I love Andy, but that could
He's
be
spicy,
hilarious.
Man.
Yeah. It almost could be funnier for Andy to not like you than to like you.
Oh, he the stuff that would come out of his mouth and the things that he said to me, it's like... You never forget it, but I forgot it, just so I would never forget it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I don't want to remember it.
Yeah.
So I had to burn it out of my goddamn brain. I think he said something along the lines of, you know, you should just probably wear a bikini and this would have been better. It was something like that. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go home. I'm going to go home and kill myself. Look at you.
That's hilarious. No, because I could hear that in his voice.
Yeah.
You ever think about a bikini?
Yeah, exactly.
You ever think? Maybe a swimsuit.
That'd be it.
Do the jokes. Yeah. That'd be good.
That'd be better.
You'd be swimsuit girl.
You should have done that. Right, exactly. You should have been swimsuit girl. Well, you're a delight, Alonzo Bowden.
Jesse May, thank you.
I'm going to find you so funny, and I'm going to see if I can get your page back on Instagram. What if I could get your page back, but it came with a stipulation?
And that would be?
Doing kitchen squats.
I'll just somebody toss me a baby. Toss me a baby. I'll knock out 25 kitchen squats, and that'll be it.
Get those visible muscles.
Somebody else told me about man bun guy.
Oh, God.
That literally ties his hair in a man bun and shakes it out.
And that's it?
That's it. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And he makes money?
Yeah. They said he goes to Gold's Gym in Venice and that he's ripped and he, ties the bun and shakes it out. He's getting paid.
That fills me with rage. It fills me with rage. See, now the key is to do a crossover video of you getting up in his video.
Yeah.
And doing some shit to ruffle his shit up.
But you couldn't. Because people, then you're a hater.
Then you're a hater. But people talk about haters.
You know, it'd be great just sitting next to him reading a book. His hair gets in your book. You kind of stuff it to the side and you go back to reading a book. Yeah. Would anyone get that message?
No. No, they wouldn't.
What that guy doing there reading?
What's he reading? What is he reading for?
Yeah.
It makes me think of that Bill Hicks joke.
Right.
You know that Bill Hicks joke?
Why do you read?
Yeah, why do you? Not why do you read. What you reading for?
Yeah, what you reading?
Well, I read for many reasons. One of which, so I don't become a Waffle House waitress. Well, I think you're amazing, and I respect your comedy, and you're one of the greats, man.
Thank you.
You really are.
And so much fun, and you are one of the young comics who's blowing up, and I watch that. I love watching it. You're two generations behind me. You youngster.
Yeah.
But it is fantastic and a continued success. And thanks for having me on. We've been trying to do this for months.
For a while. We got it together.
Two road comics trying to do a podcast.
Impossible. You're where? You're in Wichita? Shit. I'm over here in North Carolina. Yeah. I'll catch you on the flip.
I'm going to be in LA from 9 to 1.
Can we
July
do this in LAX?
19th. Yeah, exactly.
I'm at gate 39. Well, you're the best, man.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Rock and I were raised with so many of the same values. Like, you work hard for what you want in life. That your word is your bond, that you do what you say you're gonna do.
My parents impressed on me the values that you work hard for what you want in life. That your word is your bond, and you do what you say and keep your promise.
That you treat people with dignity and respect, even if you don't know them, and even if you don't agree with them.
That you treat people with respect. They taught and showed me values and morals in their daily life. That is a lesson that I continue to pass along to our son. And we need to pass those lessons on to the many generations to follow.
And Barack and I set out to build lives guided by these values and to pass them on to the next generation, because we want our children and all children in this nation to know that the only limit to the height of your achievements is the reach of your dreams and your willingness to work hard for them.
Because we want our children in this nation to know that the only limit to your achievements is the strength of your dreams and your willingness to work for them.